Good morning, beloved ones.
Good morning.
Turn to someone and tell them, I am the peace and the presence of God. I am the peace and the presence of God. I am the peace and the presence of God. Yes. Wonderful, wonderful. How is everyone this morning? Good, great, prosperous. Some of you know. Some of you are prosperous. All right, thank you. Yes. Yeah. Every day in every way, I'm getting better and better, gooder and gooder. Gooder and gooder. Yes, good is all around us because God is all around us. And when we allow that presence, that goodness to touch us and to flow through us, ooh, mighty things happen. Mighty things happen. Well, this is a wonderful day. We're going to, it's a good day. And I thank you, Reverend James, for getting the energy stirred up and moved up. I could hear you in there. It's like sometimes, doesn't it feel better when the energy is stirred up and when we're moved to a higher state of consciousness and we're opened and feeling just centered? Even when things don't work, things don't come, it's all good. It's all good. Well, I wanted to start with this survey that Eric Butterworth talks about in his book, Spiritual Economics. And it was a survey that was conducted by the University of Michigan. And in essence, they wanted to know what effect money had on people's lives. And they came up with three basic findings. What do people worry about most? Money. Mm-hmm. What makes people the happiest? Money. What makes people the unhappiest? Money. Any way you cut it, they found that money has an impact upon people's lives. Now, even when we say that, as truth students, that prosperity and abundance are certainly more than having money. Is that not true? Yes, it is. And we say that constantly because it is true. But if we are also honest with ourselves, we would also say that money and having lots of it would go a long way towards our demonstrating our prosperity, right? If you say, if I'm going to demonstrate, well, if I had a lot of money, that would really go a long way to me demonstrating prosperity. Well, we continue with this series on building a prosperity consciousness, because this is all about consciousness. Sometimes we get misled and we think it's about things, but it's about the consciousness that lies in back of all things, which is the presence of God. So as we continue with this series, it might serve us well to really kind of take a look at the concept of money. Now, usually I do not speak about money from the pulpit. You very hear, you know, really hear me say, you know, if you give me $10,000, I'ma bless you and whatever. Or the first 10 people who come up and, you know, nah. But it is proper that we have an understanding of this thing called money. Eric Butterworth says in the book on page 147, for those of you who are following in that manner, in spiritual economics, he says, there is little likelihood that your life can become fully functioning with prosperity unless you have a positive and creative attitude toward money. Now, notice he didn't say unless you have lots of money, right? It's not about the amount of money that you have. He says unless you have a positive and creative attitude towards money. Now, we need to look at our relationship to money because, truth be told, some of us have some conflicting views about it. We want it and fear it at the same time. We want to have it, And then when we get it, we are filled with fear about losing it, right? Or we try to figure out how to get it, but then we are also concerned with how to hold on to it. Or maybe we see it as the cause of many ills, greed, avarice, people who experience addiction to gambling, so they have debts from gambling. There are people who might do anything to get this thing called money. People have been known to sell their very bodies, men and women, just for this thing called money, right? They've been willing to let go of all of their values and morals for what? So they can get some of this thing called money. People might even sell their mamas if they thought it would give them some money. Or maybe you hold a more higher view of it. There are people who feel that, you know, yeah, we see it as being able to do great things, to build hospitals. Money can be used to research causes or cures for diseases. Or maybe it can be used to help the indigent, build homes and feed the poor. It can be done, used to bring in some good things as well. The point is that your attitudes, your perception, your consciousness, and your relationship to and with money has a lot to do with whether you will draw it to you or keep it from you. This attitude, consciousness, perception. And so we want to clear some things up about this thing called money. Now, the first thing I want us to do is we got to be clear about a well-known misquote from the Bible. Let's just start there. Because we all know the misquote, right? That money is what? The root of all evil. Well, that is a misquote because the scripture does not say that. In 1 Timothy 6:10, it says, and a variation of different Bibles, but it says basically the love of money is the root of all evil. Now, in some translations, it doesn't even say the root. It just says it is a root of an evil. It is a root of evil. So it's not the root, because there are many roots to evil, right? That had nothing to do with money. So it is a root, meaning that it can be a cause. But it's not the money, it is what? The love of money. And this is the reason why it says why in the scripture. After that it says, because it says some folks who crave money or lust after it have wandered away from their faith and brought upon themselves trouble after trouble. Meaning that they have placed their faith where? In money, as opposed to the source of money. They got a little confused. And so when you have this craving just to have it, just to get more of it, it just brings you a little bit. That's when you start worrying about losing it. And so it's not necessarily that money is evil. It is this love, this craving, this lusting that causes you to forget your source. That is the challenge. Money, or having it, is not evil. In fact, Eric Butterworth says this. He says, money is good. Money is God in action. God in action. And he says, why? Because it is currency, or it is the creative flow of divine activity. He says that it is a tangible representation of an intangible universal substance. Money is simply a tangible representation. Now, it's not even, it's a representation, right, of an intangible universal substance. He says it's an enabling symbol which enables you to have food and clothes and shelters and the niceties or whatever it is, gas in the car. It is something that enables you to have these things. Now, Granted, you could still have food and shelter without money. You can go out there and grow some food and build you a house and whatever. But right now in our society, this thing, this symbol, is what enables us to have these things. And so if we were to look at it from this literal point of view, we would say, oh, well, you know, this is real. We need to have this piece of paper. It's real because it symbolizes, you know, our ability to, it enables us to have this food and this blah, 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 blah. But we are spiritual thinkers. We are looking at life from a spiritual perspective, and we are talking about spiritual economics. And so rightly understood, then spiritually speaking, it is a symbol of the limitless substance of God. That's what it is, spiritually speaking. A symbol of the limitless substance of God. But it's limitless. We are the ones that put a limit on it or give it a value. We say this piece of paper is going to represent $5. Or maybe $10, or $100. But we put the limit on the value of the piece of paper, of the symbol, right? Because that's what we do in, quote unquote, the economic way and world. But spiritually, we have to understand it doesn't represent $5 or $10 or $50. It is a representation of the limitless substance of God. And that's the important consciousness and attitude we want to have, because it's your attitude and your consciousness regarding this symbol that is most important, rather than the amount that's printed on it. We've been conditioned to think that this piece of paper, I could say if everybody in the world decided we were going to agree that this piece of paper now was worth $1 million, because that's what it amounts to. And everybody agreed the paper would then have the value of what? $1 million. And we'd be all trying to get this. We set the value. This, however, is simply a representation of what lies behind this thing. It is a limitless substance of God. So instead of saying, well, I only have $5, I only have $50, or I only have $500, or I only have $5,000. First of all, get rid of the onlys. The moment you say, I only have, you have set a limitation. You've boxed yourself in from the beginning. So you want to get rid of the onlys, right? So instead of saying, I only have five or 1,000 or whatever, you need to say, I have access to the limitless substance of God. Don't put a limit on it. When you open your wallet and you look in, don't say, I only have whatever amount is in there. Open it up and say, I have access to the limitless substance of God, regardless of what's in there. So you want to condition yourself to the truth. Right? So when you open, every time you open your wallet and you take, I have access to the limitless substance of God. Right? I'm not putting a limit on anything. That shifts your consciousness more than anything else. I have access to the limitless substance of God. See it as currency, because that's what it's called. It's currency. And it flows to you through with grace and ease. It's supposed to flow. It's currency because it's what? It flows to you. Now, when it flows to you, it also, there's a time period when it's going to flow from you. And it will flow from you to take care of your needs. Right? So when it's flowing from you, don't all of a sudden move into a state of fear that it will not return to you. See, so it's currency, right? It moves. So what you want to do is when you have to give it or when you have to pay, you give it freely. You give it with joy, knowing that you are in the flow. You're in the flow of the abundant divine substance of God. I'm in the flow. So money comes and it goes, but there's a flow to it, right? So I'm in this flow. And when you have this open, fearless consciousness of openness and being in the flow, money can't help come to you. The good you need cannot help but come to you because it is you are in the flow. So when you have to take care of your needs, Don't regret having to pay your bills and write your money, because we say, I gotta write this check like I did. I gotta pay this $50 for this, you know, repair. That's not the consciousness, because that's actually cursing your money, right? And causing it to flee from you. You need to be glad that you have it to pay and take care of whatever it is. So, and again, it's not the amount that's printed on it that counts. It's the consciousness with which you relate to it, whether it's the widow's mite of two pennies, or if it's a $1 million check, that doesn't matter. It's the consciousness. I'm grateful and thankful. I'm in the flow of God's good and God's substance. I have access to the limitless substance of God. Regardless of the value on the piece of paper, I have access to the limitless substance of God. Eric Butterworth says that when every time you handle money, you should bless it. You should bless it. He says, because to bless something is to confer prosperity and happiness upon the thing that you are blessing, right? And so we want to bless it. To bless something is to confer that consciousness, to give thanks that this is a constant reminder of the limitless substance of God that can multiply as it comes to you and as it moves through you to bless others. See? So we want to get into this flow. So while we all like it to come to us, we shouldn't really have a challenge when it moves from us. Because if you have that kind of a challenge, you know, then you're letting fear come into your consciousness. Remember, it is currency, right? It is keeping things in circulation. It's meant to come in, it's meant to go out. It comes in, it goes out. There's a flow to God's good and blessings. But what happens when we sort of get stuck in the process of the flow? What happens when we're afraid to follow the law of circulation and we decide that we can't let too much out? We want stuff coming in, but we don't want to let too much out. Nature tells you that doesn't work too well, right? In life, it's just life. There's an inlet and an outlet. There's an ebb and there's a flow. You know, sometimes you want to take all the good. And my teacher in metaphysics used to say you get metaphysical indigestion because you want all this stuff, more good, more good, more good, but you don't allow the process. There's nothing going out. Life does not work that way. There's an ebb, there's a flow, there's a circulation, there's in, there's outlet, there's an inlet, there's an outlet. So what happens all of a sudden when we are then we're stuck in this flow, in the process, right? When our consciousness gets jammed up with wrong thinking or fear or negativity, or when we somehow stop the flow, I'm afraid to let it go out, I can't give it out. Well, when that happens, friends, quite frankly, that is when debt and doubt take over. When you stop the flow of the substance of God, debt will not be far away. That's the process. So we need to look at then, how do we work with this whole concept of debt? Now, I think probably the most powerful chapter that Charles Fillmore wrote in his book of Prosperity, and we've been working with these two big books, Spiritual Economics by Eric Butterworth and Prosperity by Charles Fillmore. And I think the most powerful chapter in the book that I have found, that I read, is his chapter on debt. It's chapter 8 in the book. And I love the title of the chapter because he titles the chapter, God Will Pay Your Debt. And I thought, ooh, what a provocative thought. I would love to have God pay my debts. Wouldn't you? Yes, yes, yes. Well, of course, you know there's more to it than that, right? More to it. Because you have work to do in the process as well. After all, prosperity or poverty, it's all a matter of consciousness. And it's your consciousness that is at stake, not God's, right? So prosperity or poverty, it all amounts to consciousness. So let's take a look at what we might need to do in consciousness to erase debt. Now, I just said that debt comes from when we try to stop the what? Flow of abundance. When we get in the way of the circulation, we put a brake on the law of circulation, of currency, of flow, and we stop it. So that's in consciousness. So we need to look at how we can erase this debt. Now, in his chapter, Charles Fillmore starts off by quoting Jesus from the Lord's Prayer, when Jesus says, "Forgive us our debts as we have what? Forgiven our debtors." Forgive us our debt. So this is what it says on page 117. Forgive us our debts. Now, what I think we should recognize is that he said, in these words, Jesus expressed an infallible law of mind. The law that one idea must be dissolved before another can take its place. If you have in your mind any thought that someone has wronged you, that you cannot let in the cleansing power of spirit and the richness of spiritual substance until you have cast out the thought of the wrong, have forgiven it fully. You may be wondering why you have failed to get spiritual illumination or to find the consciousness of spiritual substance. Perhaps the reason is here: a lack of room for the true thoughts because other thoughts fill your mind. If you are not receiving the spiritual understanding you feel you should have, you should search your mind carefully for unforgiving thoughts. He says, thoughts are things and occupy space in the mind realm. So sometimes we have a whole lot of stuff going on up here, right? Stuff that we're holding on to. And it says that you can't have one thought can't occupy that space until it's either cast out so another comes in. So forgiveness then, or the lack of it, is obviously a very important factor in our indebtedness. If it weren't so, Jesus would not have included it in that central prayer. Pray like this. And one of the things within that prayer is about forgive us our debt. So it has an important value to us. So that's where we have to start, by letting go. Because remember, it's all in a flow. We have to let go of unforgiving thoughts. We have to let go of any thought of being wronged. We have to let go of any thought of being harmed. See, I was with that lady, "You wronged me." I was all holding into that thought. And while I did, she just said, "You got to pay $50. She was wrong in my mind. But you've got to let go that somehow you can be cheated or that you can be treated unfairly. Even though those things may happen, you cannot afford to allow that thought to enter into your consciousness. I'm being cheated. I'm being harmed. No. You've got to let that go. Because if we hold on to negativity of any sort, it dams us up. It creates a dam in that flow, and it stops the blessings. It stops the flow of God's abundance from coming to us. Forgiveness opens up. It keeps the channels open and clear. So this is what happens. We've got to work on our consciousness. And on page 119, it says, our first work in any demonstration is to contact God. Right? So we're going to start with contacting God. He says, therefore, we must forgive all men their transgressions. Through this forgiveness, we cleanse our mind so that the Father can forgive us our own transgressions. Forgive us our debts as we have forgiven our debts. Forgive me my errors, my mistakes, so that, right, I can forgive others as I have forgiven others. So there's a process then that the Spirit of God is moving to us and through us, but it does so, we have to create a clear vessel. We got to be a clear channel. And forgiveness helps us to clear the mind and to keep things moving and flowing in the right direction. So here's the thing. What we want to understand is how can we do that? You've got to come clean. You can't come to the Father asking for blessings when your heart is full of hurt and blame and shame, or feeling wronged, or somehow like you're a victim of something. You can't come asking for something with old grudges, old thoughts of vengeance, hatred, all those things. It does not work. That clogs your consciousness and your ability to receive. Jesus said, when you come to the altar, if you have anything against your brother, before you do all your prayers and all your asking and all your begging, put those things down and go to your brother and ask for what? Forgiveness. And then come back and make your petition to God. See, there's a process. There's a reason for that. Because you could be all the asking and praying, but if your heart is already filled up with negativity, where is there room for the blessings? So this is a part, you know, so if we're talking about building prosperity, then we have to understand that you can't ask God to do for you what you are unwilling to do for others. Forgiveness has to be key. So as a prosperity practice now, because this is a series on prosperity, then I think we need to find out first who we need to forgive, right? Who we are holding in debt, because we hold people in debt. Even when we say we've forgiven them, we still hold them accountable, right? We don't let people off the hook. We need to find out who we're holding in debt, who we need to forget. We need to find out where it is that we need to let go of who we think has wronged us, harmed us, whatever, and to let that go. Because if you want to prosper, you have to start there. Begin there. Forgive us our debts, what? As we have forgiven our debtors. As. You forgive first. Then the flow happens. Charles Fillmore says this on page 120. He asked, there's a question. He says, shall I be in debt as long as I hold debts against others? He says, we find this to be the law of mind. A thought of debt will produce debt. So long as you believe in debt, you will go into debt and accumulate the burdens that follow that thought. You believe you can be harmed, you will be harmed. If you believe that you're in debt, you will be in debt. So he says, whoever has not forgiven all men their debts is likely to fall in debt himself. Does this mean that you should give receipted bills to all who owe you? No. That would not be erasing the thought of debt from your mind. First, deny in mind, this is my favorite statement, first, deny in mind that any man or woman owes you anything. That's a powerful teaching. Because we all grew up with a sense of entitlement. We're entitled to things, but we're entitled to the blessings of God. Other people don't owe you a thing. Right? Your parents are obligated to feed you and clothe you to a certain degree. But once you reach maturity, even that debt is paid. You're on your own with God. Nobody owes you anything. So it says, if necessary, go over your list of names separately and sincerely forgive the thought of debt which you have been attaching to each person named. More bills may be collected in this way than in any other, for many of these people will pay what they owe when you send them this forgiving thought. Then he says, debt is a contradiction of the universal equilibrium. There's no such thing as a lack of equilibrium in the universe. Therefore, in spirit and in truth, there is no debt. Because if you think about it, if we say God is all sufficiency and God is all there is, and there is no place where God is not, and God is the fullness of all life, the goodness of all life, then how can there be debt in spirit? There is none. So, there's an affirmation that I've been saying this morning, and it's this. There is enough. I am enough. I have enough. There is enough. I am enough. I have enough. Let me hear you say that. There is enough. I am enough. I have enough. Again, there is enough. I am enough. I have enough. One more time. There is enough. I am enough. I have enough. See, we have to understand that this is the law of the universe. There is no lack in God. There is no lack in the presence and substance of God, and God is everywhere present, which means substance is everywhere present. We have to learn how to access it. So this is what he says. He said, debt exists in the mind, and in the mind is the proper place to begin liquidating them. Before you try to liquidate the thoughts, he said, these thought and these entities must be abolished in mind before their manifestations will pass away and stay away. See, it's consciousness. If you have a consciousness of debt, you got to work on that. When you abolish that consciousness of debt in your mind, then any debt you have here will begin to pass away. He says the world can never be free from the bondage of financial obligations until men erase from their minds the thoughts of mine and thine that generate debts and interest. Now here's, to me, the crucial teaching of this whole chapter. He says, analyze the thought of debt, and you will see that it involves a thought of lack. Debt is a thought of lack with absence at both ends. The creditor thinks he lacks what is owed him, and the debtor thinks he lacks what is necessary to pay it. Don't you get it? It's debt at both ends. The creditor thinks, well, I'm lacking what's owed me. I don't have what I'm supposed to have. And the debtor thinks, well, I don't have what I need to pay you. Debt is lack at both ends. Everybody's in lack. The debtor and the creditor. This is why it's so powerful. He says, there is error at both ends of the proposition and nothing in the middle. This being true, it should be easy to dissolve the whole thought that anyone owes us or that we owe anyone anything. We should fill our mind with thoughts of all sufficiency, and where there is no lack, there can be no debts. And thus we will find that the way to pay our debts is by filling our mind with the substance of ideas that are the direct opposite of the thoughts of lack that cause the debt. Ideas of abundance will more quickly and surely bring you what is yours than any thoughts you can hold about debtors discharging their obligations to you. So don't go around thinking, oh, I wish they would just give me this free pass. Or, you know, if I had gone to that lady and said, I did to the first one, it didn't work. I tried to tell her I wasn't going to pay the $50, right? It didn't work. I wanted her to forgive that debt, didn't I? I'm telling you, this is a demonstration. I wanted her to forgive the debt. But it wasn't in her. It was what? In my consciousness. The moment I said, let me get peace and let me just do this right. I didn't even have to ask the woman for that. I cleared up the debt in my own mind, which was, it's all right. It's all right. Right? And the moment I didn't let the, you know, anger and all that, I was free. And the moment I was free, the leather lady said, well, I'll forgive the debt. And I was like, well, okay. You understand this stuff works when you work it. You have to understand it. So he says, by filling our minds with the substance idea that in direct app, ideas of abundance will more quickly and surely bring to you what is yours than any debt you can hold against your debtors. See substance everywhere and affirm it, not only for yourself, but for everyone else. This is a powerful teaching. The thought of debt is a thought of lack at both ends. The creator, the creditor lacks, is in lack. The debtor is in lack. And none of that is going to help anybody. It's powerful. This whole thought of debt is powerful, but it's not helpful. So we've got to move our consciousness away from the thought of debt, because in spirit, in the realm of God, there is no debt, there is no lack. There is only the substance and fullness of God. God lacks no good thing, nothing. And when we attach ourselves to the awareness and to the consciousness and to the presence of God, we allow all that God is to come now and flow to us. And what God gives us are these wonderful divine ideas that are that carry the bounty and the blessings of God that will guide and direct us in how we should pay for whatever is needed and how we should handle life and how we should handle what is required of us. I remember the scripture when Jesus, you know, it was time for him to pay his temple tax. And he says to Peter, oh, go down to the lake and I want you to go and get this fish. Go fish. And the first fish that you find, I want you to open its mouth and there's a coin in it. Use that coin to pay our debts for the temple tax. And Peter does it. And it happens. So metaphysically, what that's saying, he's saying to Peter, who represents faith, you got to have faith. What you need to do is go into the lake of God's presence and go get you a fish. Now, fish metaphysically represent divine ideas because they're plentiful, right? So in the ocean of fish, go in there and catch you a divine idea. Open its mouth and pull out that divine idea and use that idea to pay your debts. See, this... what God gives us and what we inherit is not money, right? What we inherit from God, and what is the wealth that we have is this wealth of divine ideas. He says, catch one, and it will indeed unveil itself to you to pay for all of your needs. When you begin to realize that you are rich in ideas, and you begin to act on them, the blessings will flow. There is enough. I am enough. I have enough. Enough to share and to what? And to spare. So, blessings, ones, wonderful ones. And I want you to join us next week because there's a little bit more that I think we want to uncover about ways to be free from debt. And the question I'm going to leave you with is, but what's love got to do with it? Ah. So in the meantime, begin cleansing your house, forgiving others, and be debt-free. Blessings. Namaste. Blessings. Namaste. Namaste. Namaste.